Aloha. Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Stefano. As indicated, my name is Matthew Whiting. I am at Washington State University. I'm an applied whole tree physiologist, been working there for about 15 years now. And I'm going to sort of blitz through almost 30 slides here in less than 15 minutes. And I've taken on the challenge of providing you what I hope is the least data of any 15-minute presentation that you're going to see. I recognize that I hadn't participated in an ASHS meeting in a few years, and so I thought this would be a good opportunity for me to almost describe the philosophy behind my research program and the direction and some of the motivations and the things that that I think about as I try to understand better what the role a research program can have in Washington State for sweet cherries. And so I'd like to begin with a few key trends that really influence my thinking and where we're going with the research program. This is an image of boxes of cherries. This doesn't happen to be from Washington State, but it's in Chile. But the same production trend is happening in many regions around the world, increased production of cherries. It's actually leveled off over the last two or three years, but there had been previously a near doubling of cherry production in the Pacific Northwest from the last 10 years before that. And that's simply because prices and returns per acre had been so exceptional. The second concerning trend is the decline in the availability of skilled harvest labor. Harvest typically accounts for 50 to 60% of an annual operating budget, and there are fewer skilled people that are willing and able to pick sweet cherries. And it's an aging demographic as well, and one that presents most growers with significant concerns over the availability. There's a third trend that is concerning to some, more or less, and that is understanding what may happen in the future with immigration reform. The Dreamers, we all pay attention to the news, but there is threat to build a wall, and that will not have a positive impact, I would suggest. I'm not going to get political and speculate on what will happen, but I don't predict that it will get any better situation for cherry growers than it is right now with respect to availability of skilled harvest labor. So, I think about the research program. Start with this idea. Well, then cherry growers are going to need to improve production efficiency. And at the same time, I would suggest they need to improve fruit quality. It is an ever increasingly competitive market, and consumers put a premium on high fruit quality. So the keys to these future orchards, which I titled this talk, if we consider now, what does that next generation cherry orchard need to look like? Well, first and foremost, it must be profitable. I doubt there's anybody who's keen on starting an economically failing venture. And we're also very interested in sustainability, in long-term sustainability, economic and environmental and social. So what I think are some of the key horticultural physiological issues to achieve this include simplified pruning and training is one, when we consider, the demographics and the skill sets that are available to get out and actually prune and make complex decisions. Orchards need to be precocious and consistently productive. But the one that I put in bold here in larger font at the bottom and somehow got hidden behind the triangle is the ability to utilize or incorporate automation and mechanization. So that's really probably the main driving factor as I think about orchard systems for the future. Basically, ask the simple question, well, why would one mechanize or automate fresh market sweet cherry production? And here's a list of a few reasons. First and foremost, cherry production is very expensive. It's typically the most expensive temperate tree fruit crop grown, and that's in large part due to this massive dependence on a skilled labor supply. And again, that's primarily for harvest, but secondarily also for pruning and training. And this is because it's an industry that's been based upon vigorous seedling rootstocks, large trees, and a very small fruit. You can compare that with other pomology species, temperate tree fruits like apples and pears, which are in a very different scenario. And we're beset with complicated architectures, three-dimensional structures that vary from tree to tree and certainly from orchard to orchard. There are excellent examples of agricultural systems adopting mechanization. You know, nobody hand harvests wheat any longer. We've gone to more modern processes and modern systems. And why has that not happened for tree fruit? Why have we not seen a similar innovation and renovation? And well, there's a few reasons here. The first of which is tree fruit are typically grown in a highly variable environment. They don't look so much like that, right? There's not a 5,000-acre patch of apples in Iowa. We tend to grow with increasingly topography. We may even have suburban neighbors. And so more variable environment. clearly smaller industries. So if you talk to a large equipment manufacturer, they're quite keen to produce a number of combines for harvesting broad acre crops. But when you talk about getting into specialty crops and mechanization, that's a much smaller industry. So therefore, the profit margins for those people are less, and therefore they're less interested. A main one is about fruit quality, saying, well, how could you mechanize these processes when we're so worried about fruit quality? This is not a low moisture grain that can be beaten around and transferred many times. This is a sweet cherry, this is a peach, this is apple. So we're concerned about any automation and the effects that it may have on quality. And again, I want to come back to this complicated, random, almost architecture systems that our cherries are grown in. So I pose a sort of rhetorical question to growers often and say, well, here's a semi-modern orchard, right? This is 8 years old, Rainier. It's on a precocious rootstock. It's sort of an open vase type architecture, probably about 350 trees per acre. Is that the orchard of the future, though? If you were renovating a block, is this what you would be moving into? What about this? I'm not sure if Lynn is here, but this is Lynn Long, Oregon State University Cherry Extension Specialist here in Chile, looking at KGB system, an architecture that's been advocated because the potential for a pedestrian orchard and therefore labor efficiencies, accessing fruit from the ground, eliminating the ladders in fruit production. When I go back to that bold point that I had a few slides ago, the ability to introduce and adopt mechanization automation, I would suggest that the answer still in this, even this kind of an architecture, is no. So as a pomologist, we can look at other tree fruit crops, and I can say, well, apples had a decades-long advantage over cherries with the adoption of dwarfing rootstocks, and so this is where apple systems have evolved. Why not look there? Here's a block very close to my office, Yakima Valley, Jazz on M9, 100, actually now closer to 120, 130 bins per acre, tons per hectare, consistently year after year in a very repetitive process. And the key to this is the planar nature to that architecture. It's about 6 inches deep on either side of the trellis wire, 7 wires. So here's cherries, what we've been trying to do, something similar. One of our first grower-collaborator orchards that pruned and trained their trees, it converted them actually to the system that we've been calling the UFO, which is similar to vertical shoot positioning and grapes, sort of the original ones, but sort of this candelabra style with a horizontal permanent structure and renewable vertical fruiting wood. But the key here, again, is the planar nature, the compact nature of that architecture. Doesn't have to be the UFO system. Here's an example of a classic Totora-style structure in a Y trellis now. We've got 6 horizontal wires here spaced about 22 inches apart. This is early robin, a very profitable cherry, on a precocious rootstock, but it's very compact. So as we think about this issue of future orchard systems for sweet cherries, we come back to these same issues now, what I've just been describing to you. Compact fruiting walls, repeated processes over and over again. Ultimately, this is driven by the need to improve efficiencies. And first and foremost, that's labor efficiencies, but an orchard like this is very efficient with respect to other inputs and ultimately suitable for mechanization. Now, you don't have to incorporate mechanization. Here's some data from sort of progressively more higher density cherry orchards where we took a crew of 4 commercial pickers, and we went into different architectures, and we picked. And you can see how, as the complexity of the architecture declines from a big old tree to a UFO to a KGB, so there's an inverse relationship with the harvest efficiency. And so you're able to get much greater harvest efficiencies, labor efficiencies, with these simplified architectures. Apple, by the way, we took the same people and picked an apple. Apple's very efficient to harvest, right? And yet we see a strong emphasis in robotics and mechanization in apples. We try to make the case that cherries are really the should be addressed as well. So now, if we say things need to be compact fruiting wall architectures, then the training system question really for our group became, should it be something vertical or be something angled? And this is how one grower and I came up with a possible answer to that question. They planted one block, vertical system, 10 feet between the rows, and so they had one fruiting wall every 10 feet. He said, well, I'm going to try a V-trellis now, this angled idea. I'm going to need more space between the rows. I'm going to put them 12 feet apart, and now I have 2 walls. So, in essence, one wall every 6 feet, if you follow the ratios, right? And that was it. That was the simplified thought process of, well, V-trellis would be more productive then. And it comes down to light. This is not a mistake. This is a white slide intentionally left there. Because light is the single most important input into any orchard system. And so far, the growers don't have to pay for light. And so we looked at that same question of vertical versus angled from the light interception point of view, utilizing a PhD student, Jingjing Zhang, years ago, who developed a mobile measurement system that essentially measures whole tree light interception by in rapid fashion. And here's what it looks like. If you compare the diurnal trend, this is pre-harvest in cherries, of a vertical UFO versus an angled UFO. And it's fairly straightforward, and I would suggest fairly intuitive, that you could have picked out which one was which without any kind of sort of a legend on that figure. The V trellis, now this is going to depend on the angles and the gap that you leave at between the two in the alleyway, but obviously has a much less significant decline in light interception around solar noon and midday. And incidentally, our work with whole tree gas exchange, we know that this moment in the late morning is probably one of the most important from a canopy's point of view of carbon assimilation. It's not in the late afternoon stress. And so the difference of 60% almost light interception would also suggest that this grower math of two walls and 12 feet and one wall and 10 feet does make sense from a light interception point of view. So what about this pedestrian orchard, right? This is a concept that we hear about quite a bit. And what I've just described to you are very tall planar structures. That's not a pedestrian system. So if I think about pedestrian systems, I suppose what we need to do is find 2.5 or 3 meter tall people to pick if you want to have pedestrians. And that is possible. This is the world's tallest man. I think he's about a little over 8 feet. I'm not sure if he's any good at picking cherries, but we could give it a shot. That's a bit facetious. Our vision for pedestrian orchards is one in which there are no ladders, but we're mobilizing crews through an orchard. So we've got a crew accessing what they can from the ground, and we've got another crew accessing what they can from platforms. And that could be any of these operations, including limb tying, thinning, pruning, harvest, and the possibility to work at night, too. We've generated some data the last few years utilizing platforms. You can see there's LED lights mounted on this unit. And they're able to get a 30% efficiency from doing any of those simple processes by utilizing platforms and not moving a ladder up and down the row. When we create these compact architectures, we're also very interested in, again, this intersection of biology. Now, what's the technology? Mechanical harvest systems. And we've been looking at shorter and longer-term approaches using the mechanically assisted process or even a fully mechanical harvest. Now, when we utilize this shake and catch, this is just a few years ago, an image of a prototype system that we've been working on for shake and catch harvest of fresh market quality cherries. We're able to get into some of these apple harvest rates, if you remember that slide a few moments ago, three and a half to four times an improvement in harvest efficiency. It does yield stem-free cherries, however. We do also pursue in a longer-term approach, which requires a V-trellised fruiting wall for cherries, which are very few in the orchard currently. But if Stefano were sitting and driving this machine harvester, he would pick 50 times the fruit that he could pick lugging a ladder and a bucket. So there is great potential. Some people say, well, these are stem-free cherries and that's not cool. Well, we've actually shown that they are cool, that in many cases people prefer them and certainly accept stem-free cherries. So we see a future for that. Again, matching orchard systems with technology. I've also described a little bit about pruning and the need to simplify pruning. Well, some of the processes in these orchards are very simple, and so we've been looking at the potential to mechanize those. We've had some collaborative work with Stefano and others at WSU. This is an example of doing post-harvest summer hedging in a vertical UFO, Tyotin sweet cherry on Gisela 5, and we've looked at longer-term studies of this now, and that's some work that was done by Jackie Gordon, who's standing at the back of her master's work. And her data showed a dramatic improvement in efficiency utilizing mechanical processes, 23 to 29 times more efficient in terms of how fast it takes to get through an orchard. And some of the preliminary economic data also suggested if you had just 40 acres of cherries and you prune them by machine, you would pay for that machine in the first year. So in conclusion, I've suggested to you that the adoption of mechanization and automation in tree fruits has been slow, and particularly slow in cherries. There's some more recent investments in apples. Market pressures are going to continue to force us these types of innovations. And so when I visit with growers and we talk about this, we say, it's not about what's now. It's not about small changes in your orchard system. What's next? What does the block need to look like in 20 years from now? And so we're trying to provide engineering solutions and biological solutions to address those. Thank you for your attention this morning. And Stefano, if there's time, I'm happy to answer a question or two.
Unfortunately, you used all the 15 minutes. I'm so sorry.
Okay. That was by design.